It's on the mark. We are on the road at Wrigley Field. The Chicago Cubs, first place in the NL Central as we speak today, tie with the Brewers. And the last place but rebuilding Chicago White Sox, Gordon Whitmire of the Chicago Sun-Times, been covering the team since he came out of the womb about 20 years ago. How long have you been on the beat now, Gordon?
This is 11 years. My first year was Lou's first year.
You came in with Lou Piniella. A lot of change in 11 years, Gordon. I thought for a while there you were, how would I put it, not on board with what the Cubs were doing.
You know, that's a common misperception, apparently, by a lot of people that follow me on Twitter. Not on board is probably, it's more nuanced than that. What they were doing was a first in Major League history, a big market team that was breaking it down to the bones and starting a small market type of a rebuild. In a sport like this, with no salary caps, et cetera, that's and we see other teams obviously following that blueprint now, but that's, it's not designed that way. So is that Theo's fault? No. Theo did what he had to do. I mean, the front office, the baseball front office, operated in a very smart, visionary way. But it should have been a problem for the commissioner's office, and it shouldn't have been a rubber stamp, you know, for ownership to take over the franchise and be able to do that. And as I think we know, I mean, some of that, not all of it, but some of the decisions early on were dictated by, you know, some of the debt issues they took on. They, for two or three years there, they literally didn't have the resources, the money to spend on the baseball operation, or at least it wasn't allocated that direction to compete as a big market team. That's what happened. That's the reality of what happened. I asked the commissioner at the time about it multiple times. He seemed to have no issue with it, of course, but he should have had an issue with it. So it's not an issue with Theo or the rebuild or not getting it, not understanding. It's about the integrity of the game and the way the game is designed. A big market team should knew that. And for the first time in history, we're talking about, you know, post-free agency when you could do whatever you wanted with your money. A big market team did that intentionally.
So, okay, I like how you're looking at it, not just from a Cubs standpoint, but you're talking about the whole game. So, like, let's take a franchise like the Marlins, who have basically intermittently done both. Gone to the bottom.
The Marlins have crapped on their fans nearly their entire existence.
Right.
They've never finished in first place, by the way. They've won two World Series, and that says more about their scouting department and some of the managers and coaches they've had along the way than it does their ownership. They've got maybe the worst owner in baseball for the way he treats the fans and the city. Maybe the most despicable owner in baseball.
And my thing with the Cubs, getting back to, if we're hyper-focused here, I thought the worst thing they did was, listen, you were putting a AAA product on the field, and you were charging your fans, we're talking about the fans, you're charging them four times what the tickets were worth on the, you know, the StubHub market to come to the ballpark. There was never any concessions given to the fans and at any point, and right when they won the World Series, they jacked the prices from there.
I completely agree with you, and there was a time there where we saw their streak of 3 million attendance seasons ended. They were down closer to 2.3, I think, at one point, which means that you have inventory in terms of tickets, which means you could make offers to the fans on the primary market, not necessarily the secondary market, and they didn't do it. They didn't give much. Their big gift to the fans was keeping recently escalated ticket prices flat when they knew they were going to try to finish in last place. So from the business operation standpoint, there was a lot of disingenuous rhetoric going on and practices. The baseball side of the operation, they did exactly what they said they were going to do. And then they got pretty lucky with some of the right players. And, you know, you look at a guy like Jake Arrieta. I know I talked to people in the front office when that deal was made. They thought he was a roll of the dice. They thought they knew what they were getting out of Strope and that would make the deal worthwhile if Strope was just what they thought he was, but that Arrieta was this guy that had never put it together and he might never put it together. But if he could, he could be useful. Well, we saw he was a lot more than useful, and that was a massive part of the timeline speeding up. And, you know, Lester's been Lester, and we saw, and the young kids, by and large, hit as a collective quickly. And so a lot of things went right to move the timeline up. But even had the timeline been back 2 years, even 3 years, as long as there was growth, you'd have had to call it a success from a baseball operations standpoint.
Since you brought up Arrieta, do you think there's any scenario that he comes back here next year, considering that he's pitching a whole lot better right now? It's like a catch-22. You want him to pitch on some level. If he pitches poorly, maybe he comes back, but then it's not as attractive.
No, if he's pitching well, he's not coming back at all. I mean, there's no scenario that I could see. Now, when they picked up Quintana, with the cost certainty there at a pretty team-friendly rate, even Theo said it publicly that it almost makes you feel like he could be part of a two-player acquisition because now you know what you're paying for him, and it leaves a sort of enough money in your projected budgets, so the way you see some of the arbitration guys coming in and maybe for free agent or whatever, but you've got more in your own mind, in your own projections, you've got more to work with if you wanted to do that. But I still don't see Arrieta is going to test the market, especially if he's pitching well. There's no question about that. And once he does, if anybody's out there offering 5 years plus, I don't think the Cubs are going to go there. It's also going to be, a pretty hefty price tag. I mean, you look at what Jeff Samardzija got, 5 years, $90 million. I mean, I would think that if Arrieta's pitching well and he looks like a favorable bet coming out of this season, he's done more than Samardzija. He'll be a little older than Samardzija was when he became a free agent, but healthy, with stuff, with playoff experience, and so on, somebody will give him the money. It doesn't make sense, I think, objectively, if you're the Cubs. My God, look what you got out of him. You got the best years out of Arrieta for essentially a discount. Why would you overpay when you know it might only go down from there? Even if it's pretty good.
But somebody's got to pitch for you. Obviously, you can pay a lot less for someone who doesn't have the pedigree. So at some point, they'll have to cash in some chips there. But here, you look at Wrigleyville right now. I mean, the Cubs, the Ricketts family, has bought up most of the rooftops. You've got a hotel going up. You've got a plaza. It seems like you've got very few businesses that are trying to hold on to not selling. There's a T-shirt stop across the street that hasn't sold. But it's like they're trying to monopolize the whole corner. And like then you get back to the baseball side. It's like, well, they don't have the money for Arrieta. It's like, hold on a second. You have...
I didn't say they don't have the money.
No, not you didn't. I'm saying that they're acting like they don't.
No, what they're acting like is they don't want to overpay for what's to come. It's not necessarily a great business call to look. We see it every day. I mean, he's a very competitive guy. He's got stuff, but there are times when he labors. There's command issues at times. He can look really great and run out of pitches in his pitch count in five innings. So there's a number of reasons why. You know, if he had been the 2015 pitcher last year and into this year, you might look at it differently. But why would you pay that much money? You just got Quintana, right? And Quintana, based on his age, based on his track record, et cetera, there is every reason in the world to believe that Quintana will be as good going forward the next 3 years as either Arrieta or Lackey. It's not a knock on either one of those guys, but that's how good Quintana is, and you're probably going to lose Arrieta or Lackey. So take your pick. Quintana replaces one of them. That means going forward, you got to fill one spot. You got to backfill one spot. Is Montgomery as good as Lackey? A lot of people might say, yeah. Well, there you go. Now you need depth. That's if you choose to go that way. But you've got choices. You can look at the free agent market. You can try to look at other trades. There should be more players available in the offseason. If something breaks loose between now and the trade deadline, there's that option. But you've got multiple options. You don't have to be married to this idea of extending Arrieta, who's going to want to go out there and be one of the pitchers that sets the market if he's pitching that well. Why would you pay that much money? It's not about whether they have the money or not. They could do it if they wanted to. It's about what are your choices and why would you do that? If 3 years from now you're getting a shadow of the performance and you're paying $20 million plus a year, well, why would you even take that chance?
I guess then what I'm talking about is I keep hearing about the window. It's like, well, hold on a second. These guys are all 22, 23, 24 years old. Are you saying that you don't – because are you creating a window because you can't pay all of them? Like, I would think that Chris Bryant's the first guy you're going to sign, although if he wants to play it all the way out.
Bryant's represented by Boris just the same way Arrieta is. Chris Bryant, when they drafted Chris Bryant, when he started raking in the minors, their projection was, their evaluation was, in all likelihood, this is the kind of a guy who's probably going to test the market when the time comes. They probably would have made that move either way as rookie year when they held him out long enough to maintain an extra year of club control. But they're not worried, for instance, about how much they're going to pay him, or they would have made sure he's not going to be a Super 2. But he's going to get an extra year of arbitration because of when they brought him up. They're not worried about that. They're worried about how long they have him. They anticipate he's going to go free agent when he gets the chance. And honestly, why wouldn't you? You've already won the most coveted title in American sports history, probably. You've been a Rookie of the Year, an MVP, a two-time All-Star, and there's every reason to believe he's going to continue to perform. At that point, I mean, there's not extra motivation to necessarily stay here. Yes, it's special. It's your original team. It's special. It's Chicago. It's the Cubs. But what if the Yankees come calling and he gets a chance to have an entirely different experience with a historic franchise or a historic baseball place? You know, all I'm saying is that they anticipate that. That's probably what's going to happen. They already made a run at him to sign him to a multi-year, and it went nowhere. Does that change in 2-3 years? Maybe. But so guys like him, that's what they mean when they're talking about a window. They're kind of projecting, well, this guy might be able to sign beyond when he's eligible for free agency. This guy probably won't. How does our payroll project? Because they do look at the luxury tax threshold. They don't want to be paying, you know, dollar for dollar when they exceed it in terms of penalties. And you're also trying to move that window. It's almost like the Price is Right. You remember that Price is Right game where it's like a
mountain climber? Or no, you're talking about the slider.
Yeah, the slider, the range where you hit that big button and it stops, and if the price is within that range. Yeah. Well, it's like that. That window, they want that window to keep moving. And the only way that does it, you know, you keep growing. You keep the farm system going. You bring in you don't sign Arrieta until you're running him into the ground. You try to identify somebody else who's going to come in and give you some of their better years. And then you hopefully develop a couple of pitchers along the way, which we haven't seen yet. But if that happens, then you can continue to keep that window moving. So there is this window that they're looking at, but they're still trying to build the next window on top of that. So believe me, they're looking years out on all of this stuff, both in terms of player evaluation and payroll evaluation.
You've been around the game, you know, longer than just covering the Cubs and being in Chicago. Have you come across a guy who you would consider as shrewd as Theo? Like, who do you put in that category? Because, I mean, obviously he's up there.
Oh, yeah, he's way up there. Pat Gillick is an all-timer. I covered the Twins when Terry Ryan was the GM, and you know, he never had resources to work with, and he didn't look at the game exactly like Theo does. But as an evaluator, he was as good as it got among all the executives out there. But take a look at what Theo's done. Whether you love him or hate him, whether you think he's made this mistake or that mistake, whether you think he's lucky or not, whatever your opinion is of him, look what he's accomplished, and compare it to the all-time executives in the game, and there's a plaque in Cooperstown waiting for him.
Gordon, always a pleasure. I see you. I see you looking for. I think Theo right now. Who are you eyeing right now? You got a. I feel like something's going on, so I'm going to let you do your work.
It's just Cub Sox. Always something going on.
Last question. Who's the toughest Cubs competition for the Cubs in the division in your mind right now? Milwaukee obviously sliding. A lot of people think Pittsburgh. And if this team does get in the playoffs, how do you think they match up with the Dodgers, who clearly have been the class of the NL?
First question, I think Pittsburgh, too, the way they're coming on right now, the way they're playing right now. Of course, they don't have enough depth to really withstand a big injury, and they just had another guy go down. I don't know how long he'll be out. Going to the into the playoffs, the way the Dodgers roster looks right now, yeah, maybe you like their chances with Kershaw going on the DL. And even assuming that Kershaw's back issue isn't season-ending or terribly serious, it is a recurring thing with him. So who knows if he misses time, what he's like come postseason. Beyond that, I mean, it's going to be a grind in the postseason. Just the way it was last year, but for different reasons. I think Washington's really poised to do something. They added a couple of bullpen guys. If they add anybody else to that bullpen, they could be really, really scary. And the Dodgers are just so deep and talented. But then that's where a guy like Quintana comes in. You know, you got another lefty out there, and they're a lefty dominant team. So the Cubs, they could be as prepared as anybody. It could be really interesting if the Cubs finish hot. It could be a dynamic playoff landscape in the National League.
Last one, favorite manager you ever covered? Sorry, I was just thinking about it. Like, you've been around so many: Dusty, Lou, Joe. Go back to Minnesota and Ron Gardenhire. I mean, we got a lot going on here.
Well, I never covered Dusty, but funny, I covered Lou twice in Seattle and here, and I covered Joe twice when he was manager for 30 days at the end of the 99 season with the Angels, and then obviously here. Joe's right. It's really Joe and Lou. And Lou was the first manager I covered, and he's such a – he's so unique and unvarnished. I'm going to give Lou the slight edge on that one.
Gordon, appreciate the time. Love your work. You're the best.
All right. Thanks, Carm.